still dealing with the New Testament as a reliable source of information in getting to know the real Jesus, we come today, I think, to a very interesting and popular question about the psychology of Jesus, his psyche. All right, we can see how other people looked at him. That's the portrait, and that's beautiful, and plenty we can learn from that. We can, using the criteria I've just set out before you and others, get back to some, at any rate, confidence that we are in touch at times with, probably with his actual words. And more and more, in relation to the synoptic Gospels, that's Matthew, Mark and Luke, scholars are more and more confident, rather than less and less, that we are in touch frequently with the actual words of Jesus, of course translated into Greek, but the close as we can to that. Many of the things Jesus did we can get back to with a certain amount of probability, and we know at least that's the shape of the man and that's the kind of thing, though every time it's now become a fireside story. It's been built up and told in powerful imaginative language, so you don't take all the images as photographs, huh? So you've got to watch for that. But what about his psyche? Can we get an idea of how he thought about himself, who he knew he was, and what he knew he was about? I mean, that would be a fascinating thing to be able to do. Well, these are my thoughts on that to share with you at the beginning, so you at least know where I'm coming from. Firstly, that question is a very modern question, put the way I've put it. And so the Gospels weren't designed to answer it. Doesn't mean we won't get information from them about it, we will. But if they're not designed for it, then they're not actually answering that question. We mightn't find as much as we'd like to find today with our interest in psychology and personality and individuality and all that kind of fairly modern interest. They were very open to people, but the psychological interest we have, they weren't looking at it from that point of view. In order to get to the psychology of Jesus, to his psyche, we would need, firstly, and this I think becomes obvious, you need firstly to establish that they were the words he spoke. Now, if you can do that, and when you can do that, you do have a reliable basis for inference, haven't you? Because just by psychological consistency that we argue from, if Jesus said those words, he must have meant something by them, and so you can work to his meaning as he understood it from the words, once you established that he used them. But that needs care, you see. Because some of the words of Jesus in the Gospel, say of John, for example, might be words that express what Jesus really was as John came to see it. And John has Jesus center stage in his Gospel, speaking page after page of monologue. Now, were they all Jesus' words as remembered by John? Or is John communicating the real meaning of who Jesus really was as he came to see him in the light of the resurrection and light of his experience later? So Jesus says, for example, I am the light of the world. Jesus was the light of the world. That's a true statement about Jesus, isn't it? I am the light of the world. By the time John is there, the world, the Roman world, was all over, gradually coming to realize the beauty of Jesus. So the statement's true, and having Jesus say it tells us something about Jesus, that he was the light of the world. But I hope you see my point. If Jesus actually spoke those words, that tells us something about the psychology of Jesus that's extra, doesn't it? You can be the light of the world without saying it, can't you? Well, I mean, none of you know, I suppose. You can, can't you? So, it's one thing for John to say he is the light of the world. It's one thing for John to say that he was the good shepherd. It's one thing for John to be saying that, and that tells us the truth about Jesus. But if you're asking a psychological question, you have to establish first that Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And if Jesus said it, then he must have, that gives an idea of his thought about himself, doesn't it? And who he was, and his relationship to the world. Clear? The question clear? Right. However, let me say this. Once again, in regard to the New Testament as revelation, of Jesus as revealing to me, the reader, to the readers in Rome about Jesus, as source for knowing who Jesus really was. The intentions of Jesus and his psychological states are only one element in it. Like, what I intend to say to you tonight ought to be important because I've planned the lecture, in case you didn't notice. But you're hearing things that are more than I intended you to hear, less than I intended you to hear, and other than I intended you to hear, aren't you? Because you're watching body language, I presume, and I am with you. You're watching eyes, you're watching hands, you're watching a whole lot of things. There's a whole lot of things being communicated that are subconscious to me. Nothing to do with my intentions. What is revealed is what you see, not what I want you to see. What Jesus' intentions were, it'd be lovely to know. But it's not the most important thing to know. The most important thing to know is, independent of his intentions, what did those who knew him come to see him to be? That's what's revealed. That's what's shared with us. And that's got a lot to do with Jesus' psyche, if we can get to it. But if we can't, I'm not sure that we need be that disturbed and that we can't get too close. Because when you think of it, just in case you haven't forgotten to think this thought, do you know who you are? Do you know who I am? Do you know who anybody is? How much do you know about anybody? And the people that you love most and get to know most, if I believe my married brothers correctly, become more and more mysterious the older you get. Because we're just fathomless to, I mean, we're, who the heck? So, and if you find it so hard, really, to delicately enter into the psyche of another person whom you really know and love now, if we're going to try and do that with Jesus, let's be very humble, eh? Let's be very aware of what we're doing, and let's be grateful for any insights we get. But don't let's get out pliers and hammer and out and try and drag the text apart and think we're getting too far on that journey. Let's watch the painting and let it flow over us very simply, and we may come to know more and more about him, even his heart and his meanings and his aims, and we can come to know some. We will be in the course doing it. But the mystery of Jesus' person, please God, is going to become more mysterious to you the more you know about him, not less. And I think that must be the case. My last point then on this, the Gospels as a source for Jesus, is to come clean right from the beginning and just say in a few, 5 minutes at the most, what did Jesus reveal about himself? When we look at the portrait, what do we see? Now that's going to take us 24 weeks, but let me in 5 minutes say a couple of things. The first thing that's really obvious, and I want to start from here, is that they couldn't fit Jesus into the ordinary categories that they were used to. Whatever he was, whoever he thought he was, whatever he was on about, he blew their minds enough for them to, they couldn't fit him in. They couldn't say of him, he was the most fantastic bloke they'd ever met. That wasn't enough. Had it been, they would have said. They couldn't say of him, he's the greatest prophet that ever came into our lives. What they said about him, and this is so clear, and they said about him that he's man, he's human. They saw him cry, they saw him hungry, they saw him thirsty, they saw him troubled, they saw him wondering, they saw him as a real human being. For God's sake, that's so obvious when we read the Gospel. And in fact, that's what I'll be concentrating on, because that's something we're all at home with a little bit, because we're all human beings, however real, but we'd like to be real. So there's something, and the Gospels are clear on that, and abundantly clear, and we can delve into that, and that's in effect, strangely, the thing we can most forget, that he was really like us, one with us. And the Gospels say it so beautifully and so clearly. That'll be an exciting adventure, looking at that. But they say other things about him that we're going to see as we go on and on in the course. And all the other words they use about him are words that traditionally had been kept for God. They weren't able to use all these other language and images except of the one mystery who is God. So whatever there was about Jesus, they had to say things about him they could never, had never, and didn't know how to say about any other human being they'd ever met. And their divine words, their God words, their words that, as we go through our course, we'll see more and more, they had to say, not in this actual expression, but he's God. Because all the way they're doing... Now, that's a big thing, isn't it? We're dealing with an extraordinary event here. Someone who was truly like us in all things, but his uniqueness was such that they had to go into that kind of language to communicate what happened to them as they got to know him. So our journey will be trying to hold all that and delicately, hopefully humbly, journey into it. I wrote out for you to conclude this New Testament story a little story from Martin Buber, who's a Jewish philosopher. It's actually quoted by Edward Schillebeck's in his book Christ, the story of a living one, at the end of the book, 674. And he quotes Martin from Martin Buber a story that was told by a rabbi. And this is the story the rabbi told. He said, "My grandfather was paralyzed. One day, he was asked to tell about something that happened with his teacher, the great Baal Shem. Then he told how the saintly Baal Shem used to leap about and dance while he was at his prayers. As he went on with the story," says this rabbi, "my grandfather stood up. And he was so carried away that he had to show how the master had done it. And he started to caper about and dance, this paralyzed grandfather. From that moment, he was cured." And Buber ends up and says, "That's how stories should be told." It's great, isn't it? And Schillebeck's, you know, the great theologian, don't let anyone say anything else about him to you, a great theologian, is saying that's how the gospel should be told. And I'm hoping as we work through our thing with you capering and dancing, that the only way to tell the story of Jesus is to somehow enter into it and try and live it as we saw last week, and go back to these lovely portraits, but don't be a fundamentalist, please. Allow yourself to live it. Allow it to wash over you. Go into the art gallery and have a great time. Turn all the lights on and let it happen. And don't be a skeptic about it, because we're, you know, a lot of scholarship's gone into this, and we will come to know in the most assured way possible that I am aware of, or anyone's aware of, the real Jesus.